From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The case of a Central Valley man shot multiple times by immigration agents made its way to federal court in Sacramento. Carlos Ivan Mendoza Hernandez was stopped in his vehicle about 2 weeks ago by ICE in Stanislaus County, where the incident turned violent. Federal prosecutors say they were looking for Mendoza Hernandez because he is undocumented and that agents shot him after he tried to drive into them. But the circumstances of the shooting and the characterization of Mendoza Hernandez by federal officials have been challenged by the defense and family members. And more information has emerged since the shooting happened earlier this month as he remains in custody. Sharon Bernstein is a senior reporter at the Sacramento Bee and has been following this case as it moves through the court system. She joins us now. Welcome to Insight.
Hi, Vicky. Thank you for having me.
So for people who aren't familiar with the details of this case, what happened earlier this month near Modesto?
Sure. So on April the 7th, a man named Carlos Ivan Mendoza Hernandez left his home in Patterson, which is a community near Modesto, heading to work. He was pulled over by ICE agents who said later in court documents they were seeking him because he did not have authorization to be in the United States. And what followed was a traffic stop that very quickly got very violent. The officers pulled him over. He pulled over his car. There was one vehicle parked on either side of his car, according to in the front and in the back, according to court documents that we saw. The officers said in their affidavits that they ordered him to come out of the car. He did not want to come out of the car. He said he wanted to call his wife. They said no. And somehow within 2 or 3 minutes, guns were drawn and the driver's side window of his car was smashed by one of the officers who intended to pull him out. His car moved forward and the first shot was fired at that time. The car then kind of backed up in what you might think of as a 3-point turn kind of maneuver to get out of a tight space, and there was more shooting. He was shot, wounded 7 times, but kind of managed to somehow zoom the car out of that parking spot and go across a median in the road and turn back the other way before crashing. When he was coming out and making an arc with his car to go across the median, he came very, very close to one of the ICE officers, which may be why a couple days later, when he was released from the intensive care unit at a hospital in Modesto, he was taken immediately into custody by the FBI and charged with assault on the officers with his car.
Yeah, I mean, that escalation, that was just during such a short time period. It was just over the span of a couple minutes. As you've been following this case, what do federal prosecutors say about why immigration agents opened fire because he was shot 7 times?
You know, the facts of the case have not been under discussion in the court yet. So they haven't really laid that out other than the timing of it. They've been fairly precise about the timing of what happened. They're not really talking yet about why it happened. But what they have been working on, what they have been addressing in the court is the question of whether he should have been released to be in the community to await hearings on this charge or whether he should remain in detention while that was going on. Mm.
And that was yesterday in federal court. So what was decided?
Yesterday, federal judge Dale Drozd ruled that he should remain in custody pending his trial. And the reasoning the judge gave was there are two reasons that a person can be kept in custody pending their trial. One is if they're a flight risk, and the other is if they're a danger to the community. The judge did not rule on whether Mr. Mendoza Hernandez was a danger, but he did rule that he believed he was a flight risk.
What charges is he facing?
He's facing one federal charge of assaulting, impeding, and resisting federal officers.
What is his condition like? How is he doing?
We don't really know. Members of the public don't really know his full condition. I can tell you that in court, I've seen him twice in court. He also appeared in court last week in front of a different judge. He's in a wheelchair. Last week he was wounded in the face, in the mouth, in the arm, and in the torso. And so when he first appeared in court last week, it was just maybe a day out of being in the ICU in Modesto. And he was kind of propped up in a wheelchair. He had this big foam cushion kind of wrapped around his arm. And he had earphones hanging from his ears for a court interpreter to help him understand what was going on in court. He looked, I would say, unhappy, and he was kind of dabbing at his eyes with a cloth. He looked a little bit better yesterday. He was still in the wheelchair. He was wearing an orange jail jumpsuit over a white t-shirt. Yesterday, the first hearing, he was not. And I don't know if that's because they were not able to move him enough to put one of those jumpsuits on him or not, but he just had the white t-shirt on the first time. The second time he had the jail shirt on over that.
Where is he currently in custody? I would imagine he's still receiving medical treatment.
My understanding is he is still receiving medical treatment and that he is being held in a facility in California City that is primarily an ICE detention facility, but they also have a contract with the U.S. Marshals to keep other federal prisoners there.
So he does have a defense attorney. Family members have also spoke out. What is their perspective and their side of how things went down? They obviously, I would imagine, wanted him to be released from custody as this case moved forward, but the judge did not rule in their favor.
Correct. And I think it was a great disappointment for the family. The initial judge, a magistrate judge who saw him, did rule that he should be released. But that was appealed by the government, and a higher judge, a U.S. District Court judge, overturned that order yesterday. The family has been very attentive in court. Both yesterday and at the hearing last week, there were several rows in the courtroom filled with family members and community members. A Catholic priest came both times. And the community there is saying that they've sent letters to the court saying that he's not a flight risk, that he's, a family man with a 2-year-old who is part of the community, who attends church regularly, and who has not been in any kind of trouble since he's been in the United States.
In the couple of weeks since the shooting happened, I mean, in your recent reporting, prosecutors have revealed more allegations behind who Mendoza Hernandez is. What was released? What were you able to get light of?
Yes. The prosecution had a week to develop a brief to explain why they felt he should not be released. And so in that brief, they had more information than they had in the initial charging documents against him. And there were a couple of things, none of which were ruled on by the judge, but they did provide more information about what the prosecution has about him and what the government has about him. One was, it said that contrary to what Mr. Mendoza-Hernandez told the pretrial services division of the court, he did have drugs in his system at the time of the incident. They found cocaine and opiates in his urine several hours after the incident at the hospital. So that was one thing. And then the other was that they said that officials in El Salvador had told them that in 2010, he had been convicted of aggravated extortion. They also said that they showed a photo of a tattoo that they said was a gang tattoo from a faction of the 18th Street Gang. And they said that officials in El Salvador said that he was a member of that gang and that he had risen to a certain level within that gang. We don't obviously know if that's correct or not, but that's what they told the U.S. officials and what they put in court documents. And they also said that in 2010, he had been convicted of aggravated extortion in El Salvador.
Mm. And what is the defense said, or did they respond to that?
No. They did not. And I don't know, they were saying, with the first day that it happened, the head of ICE put in a tweet that Mr. Mendoza-Hernandez was wanted in El Salvador for questioning in connection to a murder. And at that time, the defense and the family was saying that that it's not true, that he's not part of a gang, that he was not guilty of murder. And then when the initial documents were filed in the court and that was not mentioned, it kind of didn't come up again. But now that it's back in the court documents, they haven't really spoken about it publicly other than to acknowledge that there's some more complications. They felt there were more complications that could impact whether he might be released or not.
Hmm. What was also interesting in your reporting was that, I mean, you mentioned that he's currently in a federal facility in California City, but that, you know, in this short period of time, he was moved around a good amount across the Central Valley in Northern California.
Yeah, a little unusual. I mean, the FBI, the federal government, will move, and local governments too, they will move defendants. If there's not room for somebody in a particular jail, they might move them to another place, bring them closer to where a hearing's going to be held. And that's not uncommon, but it is somewhat uncommon for someone, particularly someone having a medical incident, to be moved quite so much. And it unnerved his lawyers, who said that they didn't always know where he was and they weren't always able to, speak to him and find him. And in fact, in court yesterday, the federal public defender representing him, David Harshaw, asked the judge, would he please order the federal marshals to allow him to have half an hour with his client because he's had a hard time being able to talk with him.
So what comes next, Sharon?
Next is, so now he will remain in custody and it becomes a federal criminal case. There will be a hearing on May the 5th. I think we can expect the defense at some point to start laying out their version of events, which they've already indicated to us will include the idea that this was a case of excessive force and that the federal government, that the agents broke their own agency's protocol and how they dealt with him. And I think the federal government will talk about these allegations from El Salvador and say that they, you know, were very, that they could have been struck by his car and that that put them in danger.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Sacramento Bee reporter Sharon Bernstein. In the last few minutes that I have with you, you have also been just looking locally at immigration as a whole, reporting that the federal court system here has become swamped with cases challenging immigrant detainments in the Central Valley. What are the challenges that you're looking into?
This is a very interesting and unusual situation that has become pretty intense here in the Central Valley and in the particular federal court district that is located here, which is called the Eastern District of California. Because of a new rule ruling by the Supreme Court, combined with a change in immigration practices where more people are being detained, and by perhaps coincidence, simply because there happened to be quite a lot of detention beds for ICE in the Central Valley, the Eastern District, which is the federal district that includes pretty much all the Central Valley from Bakersfield up to the Oregon border and includes Sacramento, is swamped with cases of attorneys trying to get their clients who've been detained before a federal judge who can say, no, you need to let this person go. And there have been over 3,000 of these cases filed just in the last few months. And they are going through a federal court system that wasn't made to handle this volume of these types of cases. These are not, the federal courts do not normally handle run-of-the-mill immigration cases. That's handled in an entirely different system. So to have 3,000 cases come pouring in has really been a lot for everyone at the in the courthouse here to deal with, from the judges to the prosecutors.
Yeah, that just seems like a mess, and things are just so bogged down. I would imagine you're going to continue to follow this to see kind of what the wider like consequences of having this unfold, because it's going to continue to unfold in the months to come as well, I would imagine.
Yes, absolutely. And we are, in fact, working on more reporting about this right now.
Sharon, thank you for stopping by and joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sharon Bernstein is a senior reporter with the Sacramento Bee. Up next, debates are often thought of as what political candidates do when running for office, but that tradition continues to thrive at high schools in the area. We'll talk to the Sacramento Urban Debate League. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.